flower friends, my flower friends. This is the start of season two of the podcast, and I'm your host, Sarah Nayani. I learned so much from our guests the first season, and I'm so excited to bring you more conversations with flower farmers, flower growers, farmer florists, straight up florists, and more flower friends this season and into the future. We're going to kick off the second season of the pod with a farm tour of the Farmhouse Flower Farm in Stanwood, Washington. I drove up there to buy flowers from Marin Mathis a few weeks ago. Buckets filled with her lovely peonies, bearded iris, foxgloves, early sweet peas. And while I was there, Marin gave me a tour of her farm, the Farmhouse Flower Farm, and I recorded it so you could all come along with me. We walked through her sweet pea tunnels, her outdoor sweet pea rows, a bunch of perennial beds and hoops where she was drying ranunculus corms, and then through her dahlia fields. I got to meet all her doggies and chickens, and then we sat down to go through some listener questions. But before we get to the farm tour, I wanted to thank you for listening and just say what a lovely little community it's becoming. If this is your first episode listening in, I also wanted to give you a little bit of background. I am Sarah Nayani, and I have a small business in Seattle called Grow Girl Seattle, where I sell flowers, many of which I grow here on a little tiny property. I took over our sidewalk strip and driveway and backyard, and I'm just growing tons and tons of flowers in a really intensive way with small spacing in between. So nothing like the big flower farmers that we'll get to talk to throughout the seasons here, but enough that I am able to have a lot of mixed bouquets and vase arrangements and do some events. I buy in from a lot of local growers and small flower farms here in the Washington and Oregon area, so I just supplement what I'm growing with really fresh, really beautiful flowers. And I just have to say there's something different about local flowers. They smell better, they last longer, they don't need as much transport as some of the varieties of roses or other flowers that you may not even realize are coming from Africa and Ecuador. And so if you can buy locally, you're not only supporting your local community, but you're also reducing transport, reducing chemicals and refrigeration and other things that people sometimes don't realize are associated with the cut flower market. So it's been pretty incredible being part of the local flower community here in the Seattle area and in the Pacific Northwest. I've met so many incredible people while I've been working in flowers. And I had a monthly meetup with my friends, Jess and Margaret, that we would get together and just talk about our businesses and growing flowers and selling flowers. And I thought it would be really fun to turn some of those conversations into a podcast and then interview more people about their experience in the cut flower world. And I wanted to share that through the podcast. There are so many other flower-related podcasts that I love, a few being the No-Till Flowers podcast with Jenny Love, the Let's Grow Girls podcast with Sarah and Nicole, and Dish the Dirt with Rebecca Noble. So I highly encourage you to go listen to those. I listen to them all the time. But I wanted to create something a little bit different with this podcast to provide the perspective of a small urban flower grower who's growing flowers to sell and using local flowers in high-end design. My aesthetic and my mission within my business is to really celebrate local flowers. I try to go for a garden fresh design with flowers and foliage that are super fresh and locally grown. And I want people who are receiving an arrangement from me to feel like they're holding a little garden in their hands and that they're part of not just that arrangement that they receive, but the process of how that arrangement got to them. I think it's so important and something that we all feel more connected with when we know the story of what we're buying. And I'm just so fascinated by the whole process along the chain, from where do the seeds and tubers and bulbs that we buy come from? How do those people that are growing and producing them select the colors that are going to come out for that season? How do they know what the trends are going to be? How do growers figure out what colors they're going to buy and which flowers they're going to buy? and how do people grow flowers in their garden all the way up to in a large scale farm? How do we incorporate flowers into a landscape? How do we enjoy flowers outside and in our homes? I want to know really interesting facts about flowers. I want to know about really funky, crazy flowers. I want to know about native species of flowers and plants and how we can bring more pollinators into our homes, gardens, landscapes, ecosystems. And then of growing flowers, that leads right into how we sell flowers, how floral designers use those flowers, what they're creating, what they're thinking about, what they're inspired by, because it all kind of feeds back to what's going to be grown the next year. It's like this big circle. And so I want to hear all along the chain about what people are thinking about the flowers that they love, that they have in their homes, in their gardens, and as cut flowers. And then also about sustainability along the way. So there's so much to delve into. And you can tell that I want this podcast to be super open-ended because there's so many fascinating people doing incredible things with flowers. And I want to talk to them all. So if you're fascinated by flowers and the people who love them, this is a pod for you for sure. Thanks so much for joining in. So the typical format of this podcast is at the beginning, I like to give a little update of what's going on with my business or flower garden here in Seattle. And then I have an interview on each episode, except for the very first one, which was just my husband interviewing me about my flower business and why I was starting a podcast. So if you want to listen to that, go all the way back to episode one. And then at the end of the podcast, I like to do a little Flower Friends Flower Fact, which my friend Michaela came up with that name. So I want to credit her. And then I do a Song of the Week at the end as well, where just something to pop in while you're gardening or, I don't know, just doing housework or whatever. I just love music and get really inspired while I'm designing flowers by listening to songs. And I wanted to give a little update on that note that I started a Spotify playlist of the Flower Friends Song of the Week songs. And so when each episode comes out, I'll add the new song to that playlist. So if you're looking for something to pop in, head over to Spotify and look for Flower Friends Song of the Week playlist. So let's get to the main event, what you're all here for, the Farmhouse Flower Farm tour with Marin Mathis. I just wanted to preface it and say that I was recording on my phone while we were walking around, so the sound quality isn't my normal, like, nice Rode microphone speaker quality, but it was such a fabulous time with Marin. I had so much fun with her, and unfortunately for everyone, I was laughing nonstop, and because I was recording on my phone, I didn't have two tracks, so I couldn't edit out my insane laughter like I usually edit it out. Just get ready for a lot of laughing, some cute, cute dog sniffles in the background. I'm just putting it all out there, and I hope you'll enjoy it. Marin was so generous with her time. Her farm is absolutely beautiful. I had been up there once before because last fall I took her dahlia digging and dividing course. And that was really wonderful because we got to see her dahlia fields in full bloom at the end of the season when she was letting them all blow out to collect seeds. And so it was just a rainbow of color. She plants them in color order. And it was really cool just to see in person how she digs and divides because she grows on such a big scale that, you know, she's doing thousands and thousands of dahlias each year. And then she's selling them, the tubers, for her annual dahlia tuber sale. And so it was just really cool to see on such a big scale how that process works and how her business works. It's a wonderful, wonderful business, and love getting to spend some one-on-one time with her this a couple weeks ago. So here's something to be thinking about while we do the farm tour. It's your Flower Friends Flower Fact question of the week. What is the waggle dance in honeybees? And you'll find out the answer to that after the farm tour. Okay, I'm in the car on my way up to Stanwood, Washington, which is where the Farmhouse Flower Farm is. And I'm so excited to go see Marin pick up some beautiful buckets of flowers that I am buying from her for my subscription customers this week. And I am basically like New York Times level of reporting right now, guys. Does this remind you of the Daily Podcast? Recording from my car. This is the first Flower Friends field trip podcast.
I'm so glad that you came out. This is super fun.
Thank you for having me. So we're walking to your high tunnels right now. Yes. And what is going to be inside of these?
Sweet peas.
Woo! Sweet pea queen.
Sweet peas. So it's my favorite spot on the farm right now just because they are going gangbusters. So we've just flipped the hoop. We're kind of in the process of flipping the hoops right now. So anemones and ranunculus will come out.
Wow.
That is all. The whole entire hoop was ranunculus.
And letting them dry.
Letting them dry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. Great. So we'll be ripping those out and letting those dry. And then we'll be replacing those with, I'm toying with dahlias just because the weather's been so wild this year and the field is so wet. I can control the moisture in there.
What is your dahlia field looking like right now, if you want to describe it?
It's wet. It's really, really wet. And I'm trying not to cry.
We're approaching the sweet peas and I am squealing. This is so beautiful. Oh my God. These are so tall. I guess maybe 7-8 feet already.
About 8 feet right there. Yeah. Those ones, they won't even grow any taller just because they're already hitting the ceiling.
Wow. And look at your stem lengths here. This is like 15 inches.
Yeah. That's the number one question that I get about sweet peas is stem length. And so that's why I try to tell people, keep them tied as tight as you can, because to the netting or whatever support you're using.
Okay.
Because they have nowhere to go but up and out.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't let them get all crazy and wild that they want to do naturally on their own. I mean, look at this.
That's insane. This is like 20 inches that we're looking at right now. Plus, maybe more with the flowers at the top.
Yeah. And this is a variety that I've been trying to get my hands on seed of this variety for like the past 2 years. This is called Limelight.
Okay.
And I absolutely love it because it's almost like the color of key lime pie. It's got like that lime undertone to it. It's not white. It's not cream. It's just got this, you know, light green color to it. And I just absolutely love it.
Beautiful. So, and it smells so good in here. This one smells amazing.
So, and then this one is a variety. It's a Welsh variety and I can't pronounce the name at all. The way that it's spelled is not how it's pronounced, but it's one of my favorites. It looks like Bix, a lot like Bix.
Yep. The flowers are so big. Like they're each huge. Individual flower is enormous.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you've got this on T-posts and Hortonova netting, and this is what you'll use through the season. Like that Hortonova will keep it up.
Yeah,
wow.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we use T-posts and then you can kind of see right here where we've wired them together.
That's so smart.
Because there's two of them here. So we just kind of layer them and mix them together. And in some spots we've used rebar. That's how we normally do it. But when we run out of rebar, we just kind of layer the T-post together and it seems to work great.
These,
I know.
I've never seen sweet peas like this.
So this is another one of my favorites. This one's called Emma. And I've worked really, you know, I've looked for seed for her for a long time too. So this is awesome for it to come to fruition.
Yes.
So, fingers crossed we'll have a good seed harvest. I know. But look at this.
I know.
Some of these are almost, 20, 24 inches long.
Yeah, this one's got to be at least 2 feet there. Wow.
So Emma is really, really good. And then this is the one that everybody asks about. This is Susan Burgess.
Oh.
And it's a really vintagey, romantic pink.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like strawberries and cream. That's the only way that I can kind of describe it. But it's just...
It's like a pink blush, like in the middle, and towards the edge, it's fading out more towards white, but it's still like a light pink.
It's a really light pink that it's more pink than blush, but it's just got that white edging on it that's just, yeah, it just gives that antique, vintage, romantic just feel to it. So
when you come in here and you're cutting sweet peas, are you typically doing the flower stem or do you ever cut with the vine as
Only cut tendrils if people order it.
Got it. Okay. And so like, does that stop the plant when you
when you're cutting you're going to cut at least 2 feet off of your plant.
Yeah. And you're going to lose all the little guys along the way.
So, you know, when I'm growing for seed, really don't want to cut tendrils if I don't have to.
Because you're selling a lot of the seeds that you're producing here. Mm-hmm. So this is so cool to have these unique varieties that you've been like recommending and that people can order through
you. Well, and you get to see them in person.
Yes. I know. Now I get the preview before they get sold this year.
So, this is Sylvia Moore.
Okay. Oh, wow. So we changed right here.
Yep. So you can see the little marker.
Okay. Marker here.
So now that they're, you know, in full bloom, I'm coming in here and just kind of making sure that everything's right, that there aren't any varieties that, you know, are popping through. Like, you know, this one needs to be pulled. That just bloomed this morning. But that's blue. Like, you know, if there's blue, purple, the wrong variety, you want to make sure that your seed is true.
And pulling it out.
And pulling it out.
Okay. Yeah. And so this one's a little bit brighter pink.
Yes. I would say a little bit brighter pink. The flowers, I mean, are huge.
Yeah, they're enormous. Yeah. And again, I mean, all of your stem lengths. So do you think that if sweet peas are kind of outside and they're getting blown around a lot, they're not sturdy, that's when they shorten their...
And it depends on what you're going for. Like I always tell people, if you're just growing them in the garden and you're not growing them for cut flowers and you just, you know, want to let them go wild.
Enjoy them.
I mean, that's beautiful too. You can't go wrong with sweet peas.
Totally.
But if you're growing them as a cut flower for stem length, you want to keep them as tight to that netting as you possibly can and just kind of, I like to show my sweet peas who's boss. So I like to keep them tied to the netting as much as possible. Cause like I said, they have nowhere to go, but up and out.
Yep. Okay.
So it makes them stretch. It makes them reach.
This is insane. So beautiful.
And this is a variety called Terra.
Okay.
And I've never seen ruffles on a sweet pea like this before.
Yeah.
It's
curvy.
Yeah.
So beautiful.
So it's more of a bubblegum pink, but really good stem length, lots of ruffles, great color. So, yeah.
I like how sort of like the front part is a little bit darker than the back. This is so beautiful.
Yeah. And they're all in different, you know, different stages as they age. So as they age, they lighten. So you can tell like the, you know, younger blooms are more of a vivid pink. And then as they age, they kind of get this, you know, blushy pink.
Yeah.
And then really lighten up.
So gorgeous.
Yeah, thank you. I know, this is my favorite spot. Like, I came out here yesterday morning with my coffee, and I was just listening to the rain on the roof, and it was just like, you know, it was quiet, and it was just peaceful, and surrounded by my favorite flower and the smells and all of that. So
it's good when it rains too, that you have the tunnels and that they're filled with flowers right now. Mm-hmm. So you can like enjoy being in there.
Yeah. Cause my hoop house grown sweet peas are completely different than field grown.
Yeah.
Right now.
So these are way taller at this stage. And do the field grown get this tall eventually?
Oh yeah, they'll get this tall.
Okay, but it'll take longer.
It'll take a lot longer. And last year they didn't just because of the weather.
Yeah.
Because it was so hot. So it's kind of a, you know, every year is really different. These guys I actually started sooner. And the awesome thing about sweet peas is a lot of people think that they're these fragile little, you know, plants and flowers, but they're not. I mean, they're so tough.
Yeah.
So we got down to, 19 degrees? These plants were frozen rock solid.
Wow.
Rock solid. And they, within 2 hours, they were completely fine. So, you know, you come out here in the morning, they're just like wilted and they're all crystallized. And I'm just like, you know, even though I know they're going to be fine, you still have that, you know, the teacher in me knows that they're going to be fine. But the grower in me is like,
oh! I know, it's like a panic because they're your little babies. And if you're starting the plants early, but then, I mean, obviously they do great because they're way taller than us right now.
Yeah.
So.
They're loving life right now. So that's a good thing. But.
And what kind is this?
So this is a variety called Scylla. Oh, it's beautiful. Isn't it gorgeous? I absolutely love this one. I discovered it last year and grew it in the field. But because of the heat, we didn't get any seed from it. So I decided that it earned a spot in the greenhouse this year. So, so hopefully we'll get some seed from her this year and, we'll be able to share it.
Beautiful.
But, yeah. It's a beautiful icy blue, just huge flowers, just absolutely gorgeous. These are all the early flowering varieties over here. So these are where people are going to get their bang for their buck because they only require 10 to 11 hours of sunlight to induce the bloom cycle.
Okay.
So you can see like these started flowering way sooner than the other ones did. And you can see they're already setting seeds. So you can see all these seed pods. But yeah, they come in a variety of colors. And if it, you know, depending on where you live, if you're local here in the Pacific Northwest, it's almost like you get two crops just because they are blooming so much sooner than the other ones. So, you get more bang for your buck with these guys. So I'm really trying to tell people the early flowering varieties, like, you know, don't look past them. So, I mean, they come in a rainbow of colors and they're just fantastic. So there's, you know, there's some that are navy. Mm-hmm. Mammoth Navy is an absolute gorgeous variety. I grew that last year. But yeah, really super dark to purple to blues, pinks. Yeah, you name it. So.
And so how many plants would you say you have in this tunnel right here?
Way too many.
Definitely.
Definitely.
Thousands?
Thousands. Yeah, definitely. So there's, for every section, is about 100 plants.
Okay.
I like to plant I plant mine way too close together, but I was just trying to cram as many plants in here as I possibly could. But yeah, it's, and they do fine.
Yeah.
They do fine.
Yeah.
So I know some people are very, very, you know, regimented.
Like six-inch.
Six-inch spacing. Yeah, nope. And I'm like, I've run out of space before and I crammed them right next to each other, did a trench style system where they were literally just touching each other in that trench.
Yep.
And there was no difference.
I got to take your sweet pea class this year and I learned that from you. And so I did the same this year of just planting them super close. And I'm really happy because I did like a arch tunnel
They're
going to be like actually covering it. Whereas last year I did like the 6-inch plant spacing and it was like these spread spaces in between. So
I love that. I mean, they just have beautiful foliage. The vines are gorgeous. So, I love the thick green walls.
And are you planning to teach more sweet pea classes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
People are already
asking
me because, you know, they're starting to see the sweet peas and stuff. Yep. So yeah, definitely.
They see them now and they're like, I want to plant them or plant them better for next year.
Exactly.
That's really cool.
Or, you know, I've had people that have taken it and are going to take it again.
Yeah.
And, you know, just because they loved it. So
it was a lot of info in a short, like, period. So it was a great, like, cram session of, like, everything for sweet peas.
Well, the first time I taught it, you know, I was like, I get going and I get on these rolls and I could literally talk about sweet peas forever. But it was actually my first in-person class. And I'm like, how are we doing time-wise? And we were over 2 hours already. And I was like, oh, I'm so sorry. And everybody was like, no,
keep going. We love it.
It was a lot of fun. So
very cool. And then you have outdoor sweet peas right now and two little puppies running by. They're so cute.
They're learning, trying to learn garden manners. So they like to try to go through the netting.
These little snuffleupagus. I love their little noises that they make. How come you're so cute? That's my question. How'd you get so cute?
So we expanded. So this was the original sweet pea patch.
Okay.
Last year we added the bottom part. And then this year, this is the new expansion.
Oh, it's so nice.
Yeah. So the field grown sweet peas, you can tell, are a lot further behind than the ones that are in the hoop.
But they look really
totally
great.
Fine.
I mean, it's like, I don't know, just to describe it for people, it's like totally green all the way down. Beautiful big plants coming up. So these will be what, like a couple months behind?
Those guys are a month.
So they catch up because of the warmth.
Oh, for sure. And it's just been so, I mean, what's bad about the wet and the cold for dahlias is great for sweet peas.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's been a blessing kind of in disguise. You know, it's like, I can't stress out about my dahlias too much because the sweet peas are loving it. So, I mean, there's really, you can't control it. So.
And I know you said before that you can, you know, some of your sweet pea plants will last until the fall, which is pretty like unusual or unthought of, I think, for a lot of people. I thought they just ended at sort of mid to late summer and I pulled them and, you know, but mine didn't look like this. So.
Yeah, you can't. So my first season growing sweet peas, if you have them in the right conditions, I was harvesting them in the second week of October wearing a scarf.
Wow.
So if you have them in the right conditions and you can keep them cool, the key is, you know, afternoon shade.
Okay.
That's what I've learned is afternoon shade to give them that break from the heat because they don't like the heat. They're a cool flower. They like the cool temps. So anything, you know, above 80 degrees and they're going to just initially just start to shut down. So when it was as hot as it was last summer, we clocked it at 112 in here in our sweet pea patch. And I think it was because the black plastic that we use for weed barrier for the walkways in here, you know, it just, the heat just radiated off of that.
Yep.
And so it was not necessarily the best sweet pea year for us last year.
Does the barn help protect?
Yeah.
And do you think like having this cold spring that they'll last a long time this year? Hopefully, assuming it doesn't get too warm.
I hope so. I started mine a lot sooner this year also, just because of the heat last year and knowing, you know, you learn every year, you grow every year, you experiment. It's like trial and error, but, you know, when I first started growing flowers, I religiously always started my sweet peas on Valentine's Day. That was just the ritual.
Yeah.
And this year I started them at the beginning of January.
Wow.
So I started them a whole month sooner because I know that they can take it.
Yep.
And, you know, if you start them sooner and you grow them colder, they are actually stronger plants than if you, you know, wait until later because you're worried about the cool. They love the cool temps. So we'll see how it goes this year.
I didn't want to like give too much away about your class because I want people to go take that. But that was probably like one of the biggest and best lessons I took is that like, I actually started mine outside on a picnic table under a little zippy. And they're the healthiest, like biggest plants that I've ever grown of sweet peas. I couldn't believe the difference between like starting them in my house and like 60 degrees and starting them colder. So you really taught me these plants can take it.
They can totally take it. You want little beefcake plants. You don't want, So yeah, the number one thing that I think, you know, people make the mistake on is not enough light and too hot.
Yeah.
So sweet peas are not like celosia, zinnias, all, you know, amaranth, all of those other crops that they need the warmth, to, you know, to germinate and grow. I literally germinate them at 50 to 55 degrees in my laundry room. And then I shove them outside. As soon as those little snake heads are popping through the soil, they are going out.
Yes.
So they're tough. And we'll see how it goes. But if, you know, you can start them cooler and you can get those cell walls thicker, you can get those plants stronger and beefier, they're going to be able to withstand, you know, pests, aphids, virus, thrips, all those things that, you know, hopefully the warm temps.
Yeah, I know.
So we'll see.
I'm like of two minds because I would love for it to warm up a bit. And, but I'm also like some of my plants, even like ranunculus and things have held on so much longer than like mine were all completely done this time last year.
Yeah.
I still have some anemones blooming. I'm like, what?
I harvested the last of our anemones. What was it? Last week. But I'm just like, I couldn't do it anymore. Cause I'm like, I need that space for other things.
I
so I had to rip them out. But, it's crazy. The weather has just been nuts this year.
It's really wild.
So it's really, really wild. It'll be interesting to see what the rest of the year is like. It's been extreme after extreme because we had the heat and then we had the severe cold. And, you know, now we're getting the, you know, really, really, really wet. So don't know. We'll see. I'm just rolling with it.
It's always a guessing game in the Pacific Northwest. Well, I guess in the country right now.
Always
but
a guessing game. So.
All right. Well, this is so beautiful.
Thank
what
you.
Heaven. I love these new rows.
Thank
and
you.
How long are your... are they all like consistent sizing or these
ones are 75 feet.
Wow.
Yeah. And these are 60 feet.
Okay. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, six rows of 60 feet and 6, 7, 8 of 75. Wow. That's a lot of sweet peas. And then the ones down there.
Yeah. And then we've got the 5 rows down there. And then actually the, you know, far 2 rows are actually, dahlias were there last year in those far 2
rows. Oh, cool. Okay.
But I sewed so many sweet peas. I'm like, oh, we're going to have to turn these into sweet pea rows. So you can never have enough sweet peas.
No, never. Yeah. Never.
Now, ask me that, like, probably in another month and a half when everything is just taking over and I can't keep on top of it all.
And you're moving your, like, ladder down the road because they're so tall.
I know. So, but yeah, no, it's great. This is my favorite place to be. So
it's pretty magical with the chickens over here, and it's just cool with the
neighboring trees. I mean, this is the perfect spot for them. They're gonna get shelter from the sun. You know, the old apple tree in the background with the chickens. It's pretty awesome. I'm watching it just I've envisioned it in my head, but like watching it come to life is just pretty awesome. So.
Yes. I love it. Well,
so you'll have to come back when they're all
yeah,
flowering.
Thank you so much for letting me visit. This is so beautiful.
Absolutely.
It's just funny in my little home. It's like, you know, one, one of these.
Well, I'll be calling you. I'll be like, Sarah, I need help tying these guys up. You need a second job.
I'm always ready and willing. So you let me know.
And we've got Sweet Rocket over here.
Oh yeah, so pretty.
I'm sure you can smell it already, but have you grown Sweet Rocket before?
I haven't. It's so beautiful. I really need
to
because they're like I always admire it from afar, and then I'm like, why didn't I plant that this year? But I just have such a small space.
Oh my gosh. So I have two different colors.
Good.
I have the lilac lavender, and then I've got white down at the end, and I just
amazing.
Yeah, I absolutely love it. I mean, it's pretty much done for the year now with all the rain and stuff like that, but it's a perfect flower to grow for that gap between when your spring bulbs are kind of done and, you know, your roses and peonies haven't really hit yet.
Yeah.
So it's great.
Is this one that you sell seeds of? Or
we'll see.
Yeah, maybe. It looks like maybe
we'll
a good year for that.
Wink, wink.
Okay, so we're in your iris patch right now.
Yep.
Beautiful. Is this the autumn sunrise or something, I think?
No, this one's enraptured.
Ooh, enraptured. Okay, it's so beautiful.
And there's some of those in your order.
Ooh, yay. I love like the kind of coffee tones with purple.
I feel like
it's such a good combo.
Yeah, it's like this caramely, I mean, it glitters. Look at that. They're so intricate and just...
glittery and just
stunning. So yeah,
I think they're so like romantic.
They're
I don't
so
know. They're
romantic.
Just really soften everything up,
and they're gaining in popularity. I just absolutely love them.
Your GM is amazing. Look at all the bees on there.
I know.
They love it.
Total pollinator.
Yes Is that totally tangerine?
Totally tangerine. Okay, so here's the difference. Totally tangerine. That's my tie right there. That's the one that everybody goes nuts over, which the color is absolutely fantastic. This is the longest stem length I've ever had on my tie.
Crazy.
I mean, which I could actually use that in arrangements. Usually my tie is pretty short. I mean, it's a great color, but the stems are known for it being so short. But this year they're really long, which I'm totally thrilled about.
Yeah, those are beautiful.
And then this one, I'm not too sold on it.
It's a red one.
It's called Flames of Passion.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, not so sure about that one.
Maybe next year it'll
I don't know. But it's, I love June.
So are you basically like building out perennials in this whole section?
Yeah. So this is beautiful. All yarrow. I mean, it's got a ways to go, but this is all yarrow. We've got GM. We've got perennial phlox. That's all anemones down there. Wow. Echinacea, oregano, lupins, scabiosa, strontia, all the irises. We've got mountain mint. We've got apple mint. We've got pineapple mint. We've got globe thistle, figwort, scabiosa.
Wow, that's a lot.
all sorts of stuff. We got Formosa lilies, eucalyptus. Yeah, just I really want to beef up this section.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It's already like huge long rows. This is amazing. How nice it turned out today.
Oh, you came out on a great day.
This is crazy. It was like raining at our house this morning, so I was not expecting this.
Oh, nice. So this stuff is called Artemisia.
Ooh.
And I absolutely love it.
It's like silver gray.
It's kind of like Dusty Miller, but it's a lot taller, so it'll get like this tall.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and it's absolutely a dream to work with for bouquets. It's such an awesome filler. So if you guys are looking for a foliage or a filler, then
go for that one.
Artemisia.
Yeah. Astrantia and Artemisia, very close names.
Yes.
Both recommended.
Highly recommended. This is one of my favorite. Well,
this is so beautiful.
Thank you. I know. I love this part of the farm. So we have three ponds. And again, one of my things this year that we really want to do is just, you know, put permanent plantings in and just, you know, really make it just this magical, beautiful, beautiful place. Yes. So like yesterday I planted some roses at the base of that tree.
Oh my gosh.
It's called Darlow's Enigma and it gets 10 feet tall and it'll just ramble up into the trees.
Beautiful. Yeah. Oh, that's a dream. Well, this is so nice. It's like just this beautiful kind of field under the trees here.
Well, and I love about the farm is that it's just got a bit of everything. We have, you know, pasture where we can, you know, grow flowers and have the field, and then we've got, you know, we've got the meadow, we've got forest, we've got all of it. So,
and the pond probably really helps with some of the critters, like if you frogs and snakes and things.
Oh, we have so many frogs. We have so many frogs and just wildlife. It's absolutely awesome.
This is gorgeous. Oh my gosh, your kids must be just like in heaven.
Oh yeah.
They and your dogs.
They ride their quads around and just run around and
So you have 10 acres?
10 acres.
Wow. Mm-hmm. This is huge. Yeah. A city girl right here. I'm like, we have what? I think like 4,000 square feet or something. And half of that is house.
As soon as we saw this property, it was just like, okay, this is it.
Yes.
It felt like home from the minute I pulled in the driveway for the first time. When I worked in IT for over 20 years and I would just sit at my desk and just be like, I loved who I worked with. Like I really, you know, loved the people that I worked with. I'd been at the same company since I graduated high school.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But I didn't love what I did. Mm-hmm. And so I would sit in my cubicle every day and I'd just be like, is this all there is really? And so when Finn was born, we just kind of took that time so I quit my job and became a stay-at-home mom and, you know, just wanted a kind of a reset. Like, what do I want to do? What do we want to do as a family? And kind of through a course of a series of events, I discovered flower farming. And once I found flower farming, I was like, this is what I want to do.
Yes.
I mean, it just all fell into place. And so, and my husband has always been, you know, the country boy. He worked on a dairy farm in high school and
In Washington too?
Oh, yeah. Wow. It was just in Arlington.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And so he was just like, let's do it. And so one night we just decided while we were sitting out on our back deck, we're like, okay, we're going to do it. So we started, you know, looking for a little white farmhouse on acreage in North Stanwood. That was like the dream. And so, but, you know, that was like the fixer-upper, height of the fixer-upper craze. People were buying, you know, you weren't able to even find a farm up here. And so we would drive around. I mean, the kids would be in their car seats napping, and we'd just drive around like every road, every street, everywhere. And we just drive, and we couldn't find anything. And so we just decided, after looking for property forever, you know, farms forever, we're just like, okay, so if we can't find the dream, we're going to build the dream. So we found 5 acres on the south end of Camano Island, and we decided we were going to build. So we designed a house. We had started building. We were living in a 28-foot travel trailer on the property, pretty much homesteading.
And, oh my gosh.
Yeah. And so we had just finished. So this is the Dahlia Field.
Wow. It's looking so good.
It's hanging there.
Wow. Ooh,
it's so wet. But so yeah, we had started construction, and we were doing the whole build ourselves. And Scott had just finished the foundation. And one night I was just laying in bed. We were obviously all in the trailer. And something told me to check Redfin. And I hadn't looked at real estate in like, you know, a year and a half. And so I looked at real estate, and it was the second house on the list.
Oh my gosh.
And it had been active for 4 hours.
Why do you think you like the thought to look?
It had to have been divine intervention, because honestly, I mean, here it was, a little white farmhouse on acreage in North Stanwood. And so I woke my husband up, and I'm like, look at this. And he's like, where was this? And I'm like, I don't know. So anyway, so the next day I came and saw it, and it was just, this had to be it. So, like I said, it felt like home from the minute I pulled my car in the driveway for the first time. So here we are.
Wow. Wow. So, and this is about 3 years after you guys.
Yeah. So it'll be 3 years this August.
Oh my goodness. Yes. I can't believe all that you've done. And so what was this before it was a flower farm?
So this was just rolling horse pasture.
Okay.
Where we're standing right now. There was a boat right on the inside of the fence right there in front of the power pole.
Okay.
That should have told us something. So yeah, there was a boat in the field. I mean, it was really rolly and hilly, and so we had to grade all of this out to have it be, you know, level, so that, you know, we could grow flowers on it and stuff. So it's just, you know, it's a, this side's done. This side's a work in progress.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, we've got so much to fill in, and obviously we've got drainage issues and stuff like that with how wet it is and stuff.
This is going to be, so this will be a second field of dahlias here?
We'll see.
Or, okay, a TBD.
TBD. Yeah. TBD. We got lots of ideas. Lots of ideas, but we're not sure. I mean, that was the original plan, but we're not. We'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, for your dahlia patch right now, is everything planted already?
No.
Okay.
That's
the
problem. It's
like the rows are ready though.
Yeah. Well, okay. So everywhere you see the white stakes, that's all planted.
Okay. Oh, so you have a lot done.
I only have 4 more rows to do.
Okay.
But because it's been so wet, I haven't been able to finish it.
Yeah.
So, and plus that is the wettest part of our field. So right now, we've just had a torrential rain this weekend. And it's just been so cold and so wet this spring that I didn't even get to start planting until a month after I did last year.
That's a long difference.
And in dahlia land, that's a long time.
Yes.
So last year, the first 5 rows of our field were all annuals. So that's where my snapdragons and all of my earlier spring flowers were. Then we started the dahlia field. And then when we dug last year, the purple section was so wet that I had a lot of rot in the purple section because of how wet it was.
Yeah.
And so this year we decided to shift the dahlia field down. And so the first row starts with the dahlias this year, and we put all of our annuals back here because we're like, okay, well, we can have some more time with the annuals.
Yeah.
So right now the annuals are pretty much underwater.
Okay. better than dahlia tubers.
Yeah. So what comes up as far as flowers this year, we'll see. But I mean, I'm planted through the pinks. So I just, right now I'm kind of like, we're supposed to get another 3/4 of an inch this weekend. And so I'm like, do I just go ahead and just plant everything in the hoop house, and the dahlia field is what it is?
Yeah.
So flower farming is, I'm a type A person. Like, I like planning. I like organizing. Mm-hmm. I like, you know, to know what's going to happen. But there's so much pivoting and so many, you know, you can have the best laid out plan possible, and then, you know, it's completely out of your control, and then you just have to just kind of, you know, have a plan B, a plan C, a plan D, a plan E, a plan F. It's teaching me a lot of life lessons, that's for sure. But it's, who knows what it's going to do this year. We'll see.
It looks fantastic. I mean, these rows up here look really nice and dry and well draining. But yeah, I can see how that would really take out your dahlias if it's underwater.
So I'll show you the wet spot. But they're coming up. So, I mean, that's a good thing. It's just, I walked out here yesterday and I'm like, ooh. See, you can see where it's darker, where the dirt's darker. It's definitely... I'm not going to dig anything up. I'm not even going to look. Like, I don't even want to know. If it doesn't come up, it doesn't come up. I mean, at this point, I've got 7,000 tubers in the ground right now.
Oh, my God.
And so, I mean, I can't dig them all up. I'm not, you know, there's nothing I can do at this point. You know, I never would have thought June 6th that we'd be in this position.
Yeah.
I mean, last year we had, the whole field was planted by the end of April. So
this water reminds me of like March now. It's really strange. And everyone thinks it rains here all year round. No. And that's really not the case. It's usually like a drought for us in the summer. So,
I mean, last year it was absolutely insanely hot, drought situation, you know, kind of thing. And then this year, I mean, I have people messaging me saying, hey, can you send the water to us? I'm like, gladly.
Take buckets. Yeah, exactly. Take truckloads of it. We don't need it.
You can kind of see, I mean, this is my cafe au lait and my Coralie. You can see how wet it is right now. So it's kind of disheartening, but I mean, like I said, what are you going to do?
Okay, so what products do you sell at Farmhouse Flower Farm?
So we do cut flowers. We also do seeds, bulbs, corms, dahlia tubers.
Lots of dahlia tubers.
Lots of dahlia tubers.
You were just telling me a little bit about your sale. Yeah. So you haven't, did you do it all online this year?
We did it all online this year.
And in the past, didn't you say you'd done some in person and the line was like down the street?
Yeah. So the first year we sold dahlia tubers, we didn't even have a website.
Wow.
And so we sold them on farm and the response was so amazing. The line, people started, we didn't open till 11 and people started lining up at 5 o'clock in the morning. And so the line was like 2.5 hours long.
Wow.
And even though people were waiting in line for that amount of time, I wish I could bottle up the feeling of that day.
Yeah.
It was so awesome to just be able to meet everyone, talk to them, like, you know, put a face to the farm, you know, just be able to greet them and, you know, thank them for supporting us. And it was just an amazing day. So, yeah. And, you know, just getting to, I mean, people that were standing next to each other in line, they got to know each other and, you know, bonding over flowers. It was a pretty awesome day.
We're recording right now in your what do you call this? Your flower house. I don't know.
So we call this our farm stand.
Okay.
Yeah.
That would make sense. Yeah. It's basically a small house filled with flowers.
It originally was an old Model T garage.
Ooh.
Yeah. So when we bought the house, I mean, it still had the rails where you would pull the car into the garage, and it was all dark wood. And so this is all original. We just painted it white and put in some lights and here we are.
That's gorgeous. So,
thank you. We love it.
And so will you have the farm stand open for selling flowers like this summer to customers? Is that how you sell cut flowers?
So this year, I'm really trying to like, there's a couple things that I've had to take off the docket.
Yes.
To accommodate other things that we're going to be working on this season. So unfortunately the farm stand won't be open this year, but we're still, you know, if people want flowers, they can always send me a message or an email and I'm happy to make them an arrangement or bouquet. So we're still selling flowers, but we're, you know, also doing to florists and that kind of thing. It just won't be open on the weekends.
So I find people really seem to be limited by either space, which you're not limited by space here, or time. Mm-hmm. And so I was wondering, like,
you know, you really have to get the bang for your buck. How do you choose which plants you're going to plant? How do you choose, like, your color schemes when you can only, you only have time for so much?
Yeah. So I really, so in the month of January, I know outside not a lot is going on, but inside there's a lot of planning and organizing that goes into, you know, deciding what we're going to grow this year. You know, what people liked last year that we really want to continue, what we didn't like or what really wasn't successful and we want to cut out of the program, that kind of thing. So there's a lot of decision making as far as flower farming goes, and also what, looking at my bouquets and, you know, just the mixes that I want to create and just kind of trying to think about those color palettes, you know, that people like, and what sell well.
Yeah.
And so really putting a lot of thought process into that. And, yeah, it's just a lot of work goes into, you know, it's not just tossing some seeds in the dirt. Some things you can direct seed in, they're really easy peasy, but, there's a lot that goes in on the back end of things as far as what we're going to grow. So,
and how do you stay organized? Are you a spreadsheet person, a journal person? Like, what's your
spreadsheet person? Spreadsheet. Very much.
Yeah,
so.
Me too.
Yeah, very much. So, just like, you know, when I need to sow this, you know, that kind of thing. So if I want to have blooms at this time, I need to sow it at this time. So I have a pretty strict calendar in the late winter, early spring.
Well, I really got to know you a little bit better through your educational aspect of your business, which is another thing that you do, add it to the list. But I was able to take the online Sweet Pea course with you and then an in-person Dahlia Digging and Dividing. Mm-hmm. And I think some of the listeners were wondering if, you know, educational opportunities is like part of what you're planning to do with your farm, if, you know, if that's going to continue being an option.
I absolutely love that connection with people and just, you know, when I'm super passionate about something, I love, you know, love to share that. I could talk about sweet peas probably all day long. But yes, I plan on, you know, continuing the education, you know, part of that. Absolutely. I think, you know, I mean, if I can make people successful in, you know, if people have questions, if I can, you know, share information from what I've experienced and, you know, I mean, the things that I've learned along the way as well. You know, I mean, I'm more than happy to share that with people. So, good. I mean, I've made the mistakes. Don't make the mistakes. So, and it's a lot of fun. I love being able to, you know, connect with people. I mean, our Sweet Pea classes, we've had people from 23 different countries all over the world.
Wow.
Attend the online Sweet Pea workshops. Yeah. So it's been
international.
It's been, I know. We're going global. So it's been a lot of fun. So yeah, I really plan to keep going with that.
Good. Sure. What would you say is the hardest part of your job?
Oh, wow.
I know you love what you do, but there's
I love what I do. The hardest part, I think the administrative side is really hard.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you get your hands in the dirt and, you know, you're just in it. And then, you know, just the time management is huge. It's huge. So my day starts at like 4 o'clock in the morning.
Oh my gosh.
And it's, you know, first I'm grabbing a cup of coffee and then, you know, it's sitting down at my dining room table and answering emails. Getting back to, you know, social media questions, you know, posting on social media, and then, you know, getting my kids off to school and being mom and getting their breakfast and all of that kind of stuff. And then, you know, coming home, taking them to school, coming home, I'm out in the field, you know, so then it's funny because, you know, I have my mom clothes and then I have my farm clothes. So, you know, I get in my mom clothes and then I take them to school. I come back home. I change into my farm clothes. I'm digging in the dirt and doing all the farm stuff all day long. Then I change back into my farm or to my mom clothes.
To go pick them up.
You know, so
you wear a lot of hats and you're just in one day.
Lots of hats. So time management can be a struggle at times, just trying to keep all the balls in the air. And the longer I do this, you know, initially I thought I want to do farmers markets. I want to do, you know, all these things. And it's, you know, learning as you're going, like, maybe I don't want to do that. And that's okay.
Yep.
You know, just staying with it and just, you know, seeing where the journey takes you it's been the most fun for me, is because I never would have thought in a million years that I'd be doing podcasts or that I'd be, you know, teaching, you know, online Sweet Pea class.
To 23 countries. To 23
countries. But yeah, it's just been fun to see where the journey takes you. As far as like growing flowers, the most difficult part for me is still pinching. Pinching is so hard. But you know, I mean, it's the best thing you can do for your plants. But at the same time, I think that's the hardest.
You have all this growth and you're like, oh, now I have to snip it back 6 inches or whatever it is.
I'm a total instant gratification person. Yeah. And I love like seeing the plants growing and getting, you know, bigger and stuff. And so to cut them, you know, is so counterintuitive, but at the same time, it's the best thing you can do.
That is really hard.
Yeah.
And then what would you kind of answered what part of the best part of your job is, but what would you say your favorite part of your farm or growing flowers is?
The favorite part for me, well, there's multiple favorite parts. The favorite part for me is just really like handing off that bouquet.
Yeah.
Some of the most powerful moments as a flower farmer have been handing off either that bridal bouquet, that bouquet of sweet peas, whatever it is. You just don't know what those flowers are going to mean to somebody or where they're taking them, especially with COVID. It gives me goosebumps just to think about it, but it's been an absolutely just magical experience. Personally, at the end of the day, just walking the field.
Yeah.
Those are some of my favorite moments with the kids, and just, you know, they have so many questions and they want to see, you know, all the flowers, and we walk the field as a family, and it just, yeah, it just kind of re-energizes you, you know, like, wow, you know, look at what we've done, look at what we've created, look at what we're doing, you know.
And as a family, yeah. I mean, you're leading the charge, but it's like your whole family is involved in your business. So
yeah,
that's really special.
Yeah.
Well, we had a bunch of listener questions. Yeah. So if you want to do like a rapid fire, we can kind of go down.
Absolutely.
So Kristen at Rising Tide Gardens wants to know if you use beneficial insects.
We haven't had to yet.
Good.
Yeah, we haven't had to yet. Ladybugs, yes, but we haven't had to yet. So I don't. It's not something that I'm opposed to. I love the idea of it. But yeah, we haven't had to yet.
And we just walked your grounds and you have a pond. So, and you've got a lot of like good critters eating some of the bad insects. So might not need to, you know, knock on wood. Michelle Kate from Little Free Flowery wanted to know what your favorite dahlia is.
Oh, Michelle.
She asked a painful question.
She did ask a painful question. It depends. Oh my gosh. Can I plead the fifth?
Yes, no, you can.
I honestly, you know, I mean, there's so many good ones. There's so many good ones for so many different reasons. Cafe's up there at the top. I know that's not a shocker to anybody, but, you know, I'm growing the real Castle Drive this year. So excited about that. So cannot,
because people, Coralie and Castle Drive, get confused, right? Okay.
And I'm growing them right next to each other, so I can do a comparison.
Oh, my gosh. So I can't wait to see TBD. What the difference, like, side by side.
I've seen them in real life. I've seen it in real life. And once you see it in real life, it's so different than Coralie.
Interesting.
So different.
Okay.
So I can't wait to do that comparison.
I wonder why they got, like, mixed up like that. But yeah, somewhere along the line.
Yeah, I don't know. But, yeah, so a Cafe au Lait. Oh my gosh, there's so many good ones. Ask with Minnie, Kara Elizabeth. There's a really good one called Verone's 1430 that I have that I didn't sell last year because I wanted to, people always went nuts for that one when I posted it. So, I am hopefully going to have enough stock this year to sell that one. So that one's very, very cool. And then just, some of my breeding ones.
Yeah.
So that's been super fun too. I know. But I mean, honestly, is there really a bad dahlia?
No. Let's be honest.
I mean, we all have our favorite color palettes, but is there really a bad dahlia? No.
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 And so are you doing a lot of breeding of dahlias right now? Mm-hmm. And so how much of your field have you kind of like dedicated for your seedlings?
So I have one full row dedicated. So that's 200 plants.
Wow.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see what comes from the season.
Yeah. Last year, I mean, last year was my first year seeing them kind of come to fruition and stuff like that. So we'll see.
Yeah.
I mean, it takes patience.
How many did you end up keeping from last year as tubers for this, or I guess as cuttings and tubers for
12.
This year? 12. Okay. Ooh, yeah. That's good.
Yeah. So
that's really good.
Yeah. So we'll see. There's one that I'm calling strawberry wine that I'm really, really excited about. But yeah, we'll see.
Okay. And then Michelle also wanted to know, what's your favorite way to store tubers?
So how we store our tubers is, we dig them right out of the field and they go into bulb crates. I don't rinse them. I don't take the dirt off of them. I don't do anything. If it's a massive, you know, just wad of mud or whatever, like I'll take some of it off.
Okay.
But I like to leave them in their natural environment if at all possible.
Okay.
So I leave the dirt on them and then they go into bulb crates and then we put them in our flower cooler and store them in our cooler all winter long. And we keep them between 40 to 45 degrees with the humidity being at about 90%.
Okay.
And we just keep them in our flower cooler all winter. And then I don't wash them until right before I divide them, like literally right before I divide them.
So does that all the dirt and soil kind of help keep the tuber intact? It kind of thinks it's outside a little bit, but it's dry.
Right. So the second that you introduce that water, that's when you're going to run into issues with your tubers. So, we don't rinse them. We don't wash them. We don't do any of that stuff. We just take them literally right out of the dirt, put them in a bulb crate, and into the cooler they go. Because that dirt acts as a natural insulator. So, you know, they're kind of still thinking like, hey, we're still, you know, hanging out kind of thing. So, I've done it in cedar shavings before, pine shavings. In this way works the best.
Okay.
So, for me, anyways.
Great. Yeah.
So, there's so many different ways that you can do it, but that's how we do it here.
Awesome. And then Jess from Curly Girl Gardens wants to know how you manage for disease with so many gorgeous dahlias growing in your field.
Disease and virus is a huge thing when growing dahlias. So I walk my field every day looking for signs of virus or disease. Anything that looks funky, when in doubt, throw it out.
Okay.
So I'm one of those, if I see something that doesn't look right, it's out.
Yeah.
So I'm not messing around as far as, you know, virus goes. I'm not going to wait and see. If it doesn't look right, it's gone.
Okay.
That's kind of I'd rather be safe than sorry. It's pretty painful, but, you know, when you're pulling out a plant, but I'd rather pull out one than 10.
Yep. Or like have a whole row get diseased or something.
Because it spreads so fast.
Yeah.
So when in doubt, throw it out.
Christy at Huckleberry Flower Co. asked where you see yourself and your farm in 5 years.
That is a great question.
Yeah.
I do not know. we're trying to figure that out. I think that's what a lot of this year is. You know, I'm doing a lot this year. And so I'm just trying to figure out where we want to take this thing.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like the sky's the limit. The response to the farm has just been so amazing.
Huge.
It's just been so huge and so fast. And it just is taking my breath away. And so I'm just really trying to figure, you know, what's healthy for us.
Yeah.
You know, where do we really want to go with this thing? And we'll just kind of see where it goes from here. But I've got a lot of really cool things I'm working on that I can't wait to share with you guys. But so we'll just have to see. So I'm happy with where we're at right now. I'd like to grow and take it a little bit bigger, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
TBD.
Well, that leads right into our last question, which is from Kelly at Big Bottom Bouquets. Best name ever. She wants to know how you balance farming, family, and fun.
So, really great question. So, I'm trying to figure that out. Honestly, and that's, you know, like I said, we've spent every minute, every ounce of energy that we have bringing this farm to life and, you know, making it a functioning business. And so this year is really our year to kind of, you know, figure out what we want to do, mm-hmm. where we want to go with this and, you know, putting those pieces in place so that, you know, next year, you know, we're we're ready.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's been 100 miles. It's been more like 150 miles an hour for the last, you know, 2.5 years. So, you know, we're just really trying to be intentional with our time and our energy. So, yeah, and I don't want the boys and our family to feel like they've sacrificed because of our business. So I want the business to be just the cherry on the sundae, yeah. You know, and family and fun should come first. And, yeah, so we're trying to figure that out. To
reprioritize, yeah. Every day. Yeah. It's like a struggle.
Yeah. And, you know, I tend to be a workaholic by nature. And so, you know, just to really kind of take a little bit of a step back and, yeah, it doesn't have to be work 24/7.
Well, if I can have one more question of my own,
yeah, would absolutely. Be,
I know you just went to England. You got to see your flower friend, Nicole, from one of my favorite podcasts, Let's Grow Girls.
Yes.
And so how was your trip? And was that, did you feel like you got to take a breath because you weren't on the farm, or did it feel like that was still going 150 miles?
So the trip was absolutely amazing.
Good.
Other than the fact that I got COVID.
Oh no.
Yeah. So we were gone for a week and then ended up being gone for 2 weeks. England was amazing. It was amazing. I absolutely loved it. I cannot wait to go back.
Good.
Nicole and I talk every day on Instagram and I just, she's, you know, one of, like I said, one of those people that you just click with from the get go, you know?
Yeah.
And so to be able to meet her in person, it was just awesome. So I love that girl. But I got to meet Roger Parsons.
Oh, my sweet pea king with the sweet pea queen.
It was, you know, being able to just see his farm, talk to him, ask him questions. I smelt my first sweet pea of the season at his farm. It was so awesome and just so, they're so, such delightful people. And to see where a lot of my seed comes from.
Yes.
But yeah, it was awesome. And we got to see, we went up to Edinburgh for the day, just seeing all the sights, and just England is just a magical, magical country.
Yeah.
So that was awesome. But we literally shipped out the last of the Dahlia tubers literally less than 24 hours before we got on a plane and went over to England. So it felt like I was literally coming down off of this just huge ride and just, you know, cause we'd just been grinding for so long, you know, getting all those tubers shipped out. But,
you had thousands that you shipped out.
Thousands and thousands and thousands. It was the perfect timing.
Good.
For that trip and just what I needed at that time. We didn't know that when we booked it, but
it was
great to just be able to just, you know, get those into the hands of the post office and just be able to be like, okay, I need to take a breath now. But yeah, it was good. It was a great break and loved it. Loved every second of it, other than COVID.
Well, thank you so much for joining. And where can people find you online if they're not? Of course, people should all be following you already, but
you're so sweet. So you can find us on our website, thefarmhouseflowerfarm.com. We're also on Instagram, The Farmhouse Flower Farm, and we're on Facebook as well.
Great. Well, people go look at her beautiful sweet peas and we'll post some to the account as well. And thank you so much for joining today.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is awesome. What a total dream to get to visit Marin at the Farmhouse Flower Farm at the height of sweet pea season. It was incredible. I've never smelled anything like walking into those high tunnels with her 10-foot sweet peas towering over us. So thank you so much, Marin. It was amazing to see you, and you were just a wealth of knowledge. And I just can't wait to share this episode with everyone so they can come on the flower tour with us. So now over to the flower fact of the week. And the question was, what is the waggle dance in honeybees? And I'm going to read you guys an answer. It's from this amazing book. It's called Why Do Bees Buzz? Fascinating Answers to Questions About Bees. It's by Elizabeth Capaldi Evans and Carol A. Butler. And Dr. Evans is actually a professor at the college that I went to, Bucknell University in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania. And she wrote this book. She's a bee and insect expert. And my friend Julie DeLugas, who's now Julie Fadden from her married name, she did the illustrations of the bees in this book. And it's amazing. I just was at a wedding with all of my college friends in the Outer Banks in North Carolina. It was the first time I've gotten to see them since COVID, so it was long overdue. We had a wonderful long weekend there together, and I got to just complimenting Julie because she is an artist and she's been doing these incredible paintings. And I just was remembering back in college, she did some medical illustrations and some illustrations for this book. So I got to asking her, what book was that again? And I ordered it on Amazon right when we were hanging out. And so when I returned back to Seattle, the book was waiting for me in the mail. And so I've been reading it, and it's a really wonderful book. And then I just love like leafing through the pages and seeing all these illustrations by my friend. So if you want to check out Julie's amazing art, it's Julie Lynn DeLugas Fadden, and her Instagram handle is JLF Fine Art. Julie Lynn Fadden, JLF Fine Art. So go check out her paintings, but also this book is amazing if you want to learn more about bees. Why do bees buzz? And so the waggle dance is a form of communication that honeybees use to recruit nest mates to fly to various locations in their environment where there are good nectar sources. I'm reading this straight from the book. When a worker bee returns to the hive from a successful foraging trip, she can direct her sisters to the place where she found the food using the dance, which encodes information about its direction and distance. Can you believe this? This is crazy. Many naturalists had observed bees waggling in their hives after foraging, but it wasn't until the research of Carl von Frisch that the meaning of the dance was decoded. He deciphered that recruiting function of the dance and experimentally determined how bees translate their flight through the landscape into a flight plan for the bees in the hive. After years of research, we now know how the dance is organized. I'm going to skip some of these long paragraphs here, but there's basically two environmental cues. One is the angle of the sun against the horizon, and the other is the force of gravity. And this is how they communicate where to go. So the waggle dance is a systematic way for the bees to encode their three-dimensional flight through the environment into a tidy two-dimensional pattern on the comb. The distance signal is encoded by the frequency of body vibration or waggle. If the foraging site is located close to the hive, the waggle is brief, but if it's distant, it's longer. And there's more all about the waggle dance and so many other fascinating facts about bees, a lot of bees, not just honeybees, in this book, Why Do Bees Buzz? So I just wanted to recommend it because I've just been getting a kick out of reading it and looking through the illustrations. And I thought you guys would love to know this fact because the bees are flying in your garden or at your flower farm or wherever you're listening to this from. And they're flying back to their hive and they're doing a little dance to tell their buddies to go get the pollen and the nectar from your flowers. So I just thought that was the coolest thing ever, and I thought you guys would love it too. So switching gears, the song of the week this week is In Dreams by Roy Orbison, and it's dedicated to my dad who passed away earlier this year. I've been just like going back through old songs of artists that I remember that he really loved, and Roy Orbison was one of those. And a couple months ago when I was looking through his albums, I found this one called A Love So Beautiful, and it's his songs with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra. And so it's the beautiful original versions, but with orchestra or symphony, I don't know what the right word is, laid on top of his original songs. And they just, I don't know, directed, wrote it so beautifully to just match with the music, but like enhance it. So I really love the original version of In Dreams, but I also really recommend to look up this version from A Love So Beautiful. That'll do it for this week, guys, but I will see you next week. I'll be back with a wonderful interview with Ariel Zamora from Small Yard Flowers. We're going to talk about roses and a bunch of other great topics. So catch you then. In dreams, do-do-do-do-do, I walk, do-do-do-do-do, with you. In dreams I talk to you.